that I missed all of you, but I didn't recognize how much I missed all of you until I actually saw you again. So it's been a really good day for me, and you know, I've been really excited to see all of you again. And I'm excited this evening to be able to study God's Word with you. I appreciate the prayers for me. We're going to be studying this evening about the race set before us. You know, we talk a lot about our Christian race or our Christian walk, the path that we're supposed to be on. We talk about all these different analogies, and there's so many scriptures that compare our lives as Christians to a race. This evening, I want to really magnify those examples and those analogies, but one in particular. You know, Paul talks about the race so much throughout his epistles, and he even, near the end of his life, talks about how he had completed his race and finished that course, and how he had been successful in his efforts to live a good Christian life. And so this evening, I want to study with you about living that race and walking that path that God has set out for us. And we find this in Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1. It gives us some really good information about how we can prepare to run this race and how we can live this life that Christ has told us we are expected to live. So in Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1, it says, "Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us." So in this passage, the author is telling us how to run our race and giving us details about how we can prepare ourselves to run that race and continually refresh our minds on how to live the type of life that Christ has commanded us to live. And I want to start off by looking at what he's talking about here, where he says, "Seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses." You know, I've always just kind of skimmed over this. And, you know, we understand that it is looking back to the previous chapter, chapter 11, where we see all of the examples of faith. And so he's saying, looking back at this chapter of, you know, Abraham and all of the incredible examples of faith that we have throughout Scripture, we see all of these great people that can be good examples for us for how to live this race. But I never really think about what they were witnessing to. What were they witnesses of? They had to be witnesses of something. They're not just witnesses. And I just kind of skim over that word. So let's think about what these people, these great examples of faith, were witnessing to. In Romans chapter 8, verses 14 through 16, it says, "For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God. For ye have not received the spirit of bondage again to fear, but ye have received the spirit of adoption, whereby we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit itself beareth witness with our spirit that we are the children of God." And of course, a lot of those examples in Hebrews chapter 11 are in the Old Testament. So they didn't have exactly the same type of relationship that we have with Christ and with God, but they still had this kind of relationship as almost family to him. And we today have an opportunity to be called his children. They were bearing witness to the goodness and the faithfulness of God. Because how can we be the children of God? Not by our own power, not by our own ability or our own goodness, but rather by God's goodness and his faithfulness. To look down on us and not see us as worthy, but to see us through the lens of his love for us. And to be able to offer his son for us and give us the opportunity to be children of him, children of God. And the Spirit bears witness with our spirit when we choose to follow the Spirit of God through his word that we are children of his. And so all of those great cloud of witnesses, all of those people that were bearing witness and that we can use as examples in our race, those people were witnessing the goodness and faithfulness of God that had allowed them to be followers of his. In Lamentations chapter 3, verses 22 through 26, we see a message about the faithfulness of God. And we can kind of see a little bit more of the character of God. Lamentations 3, verses 22 through 26. It said, "It is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, saith my soul. Therefore will I hope in him. The Lord is good unto them that wait for him, to the soul that seeketh him. It is good that a man should both hope and quietly wait for the salvation of the Lord." You know, this is a very, very powerful scripture that we have here, and we can see that it's only through the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed. And that's a powerful statement. If it wasn't for him, and if it wasn't for his goodness and faithfulness that those examples in Hebrews 11 were bearing witness to, if it wasn't for him, we would be consumed. And it says, "Great is thy faithfulness." It's a good thing for us to look to God in hope and in faith. and wait for the salvation of the Lord, to have anticipation for the reward for our efforts. And this is really how it begins to tie into our race, is that it's not about the witnesses themselves, but what they were witnessing to. It's about the faithful God that we serve and who has commanded us to run the race that we run. We don't run the race with no expectation of a finish line or a trophy or a reward for us when we finish this race. Paul didn't say, I've run the race, I've finished my course, with no hope or confidence in a reward. And that's why it matters in the context of this passage that God is faithful. And that's why these people were witnesses to the faithfulness of God, so that we could follow their example and run this race and follow the path that Christ has set us on, but looking not to the witnesses themselves, but the faithful God who will reward us if we choose to follow that path. And that's who we can look to as this great inspiration for us to run the race that God has called us to. Jesus is the pinnacle of these examples that we can follow, those that point us to God, our great and faithful Father. And in Hebrews 12, 2 through 3, just the next two verses after our main text this evening, it says, "Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds." Jesus is the author and finisher of our faith. You know, throughout Scripture, both before and after his life here on earth, we can see so many examples, incredible examples of faith. And we have a lot of them listed for us there in Hebrews chapter 11. But I look at many of you as a part of the cloud of witnesses that I'm seeking to follow because you're following God. You know, we have so many incredible people who choose to serve God and choose to live a life in faithful service to him. But Jesus wrote the book. Jesus is the one who is the author of our faith. Jesus is the one who completed our faith. He is the finisher of our faith. He truly completed what it means to be a faithful follower of God and to walk this path that Hebrews chapter 12 is talking about, this race that's set before us. He completed what it means to faithfully run that race for the Lord. And we see him as this great example because we can see here at the end of verse 3, it says, "Lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds." You know, if we think about all of the things that Christ patiently endured for our sakes, you know, he was spat on, he was hit, and he was beaten, and, you know, his flesh was torn off his back. He had to carry his cross to the place that he was going to die. If we think about all of the things that Christ went through, not just during the time that he was about to die, but also throughout his entire life, sacrificing himself, living that kind of selfless life that he did, if we think about all that he was willing to go through for us and patiently endure for our sakes, we should be willing to run that kind of race for him and use him as that example for us, to point us to God, to point us to the faithfulness of God, and so that we can see the goal that we're seeking in our race. In 1 Peter 2, verse 21, it says, "For even hereunto were ye called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that ye should follow his steps." This is the calling of mankind, the calling that we have to follow the example of Christ as that author and finisher of our faith, as the one who is the true example of faithfulness and following God to a T throughout his race. And so this is God's expectation for us, to follow the example of Christ alongside that great cloud of witnesses that we can see to push us toward seeking our faithful God on this race. But also in 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 1, Paul says, "Be ye followers of me, even as I also am of Christ." And so this kind of just ties this all together so that we can see both the great cloud of witnesses, all of those who were following God and seeking God faithfully, but Christ as the head of those examples. We can follow all of those other examples, but only as they follow Christ. And we can follow each other in the good ways that we can follow Christ as well. But Christ, as that author and finisher, is the only example that matters to us to truly follow and seek after, to live the kind of life that God expects. So we can see to some extent from this first verse here in Hebrews chapter 12, God's expectation of what we're supposed to follow. And we can see a great deal of inspiration in this passage of how we can see this witness of God and the faithfulness of God, and how we can follow through on our race with the knowledge that we're going to receive the reward that he's promised because he is faithful. But in the next part of Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1, it starts talking about laying aside the weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us. You know, we face obstacles on our race, and some of those obstacles are our own fault and some of them are not. But a lot of the time I think about, you know, the race of a Christian. When we think about this race, we kind of think about a track. And we're not just running in circles on this nice, spongy, you know, material that, you know, helps us not hurt our feet and makes everything comfortable for us. And we just run around in circles our entire lives. This is more like a mountain trail. You know, you're climbing over rocks. You're getting hit in the face with tree branches. Like, this isn't a comfortable race for us. And some of that's our own fault. And some of that's from outside forces. And I want to study a little bit this evening about how we can lay aside the things that weigh us down and make this race more difficult than it has to be for us. In James chapter 1 and verse 14 through 15, we see an explanation that kind of helps us to understand both the weight and the sin that we see there in Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1. James 1, 14 through 15 says, "But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death." You know, there are certain things that we hold on to and that we struggle with, certain temptations and things that we have from our past life outside of Christ. There are things that are hard to let go of. And we have these weights that slow us down and drag us down. It's like a prisoner with a ball and chain. We're trying to run a race, but we're being held back by all these things that we refuse to let go of. And so this is kind of the weight. We have these things in our minds and different temptations that we face. But if we're not careful, those temptations and that weight, if we just let that continue to cling on to us and we continue to hold on to those things, it becomes sin. When we let ourselves be tempted and face these things over and over and over again, and we refuse to let go of the old man of sin and the things that we've struggled with in our previous life, it becomes sin. We're tempted when we're drawn away of our own lust. But when that lust conceives, it brings forth sin. And when sin is finished, it brings forth death. And so if we're not careful, we can allow those weights that we're carrying in our race, not just to slow us down, but they can start taking us backwards. They start dragging us back down that hill that we're climbing. And those things can become sin before we know it. And those temptations can escalate. And, you know, before we know it, we're dragging back into our previous lifestyle. And when sin is finished, it brings forth death. It's going to make us fail on our race with Christ. There are many different things that we can see as temptations and weights that we hold on to. And one of those is unpreparedness. In Luke chapter 14, verses 28 through 32, it says, "For which of you, intending to build a tower, sitteth not down first and counteth the cost, whether he have sufficient to finish it? Lest haply, after he hath laid the foundation and is not able to finish it, all that behold it begin to mock him, saying, This man began to build and was not able to finish. Or what king, going to make war against another king, sitteth not down first and consulteth whether he be able with 10,000 to meet him that cometh against him with 20,000? Or else, while the other is yet a great way off, he sendeth an ambassage and desireth conditions of peace." Christ had just had people wanting to follow him, wanting to serve him, wanting to be his disciples. And he tells them, "You can't follow me if you're not willing to let go of the things of the world." He says, "You can't come to me if you don't first hate your father and mother and brothers and wife and all your family and all your friends, if you don't love me more than you love them." These people wanted to follow Christ. They had every desire to do so. But they were allowing things in their lives to drag them down. And we can let both bad relationships and good relationships drag us down if we love those people more than we love Christ. Those good relationships can be a great encourager for us. But if we start placing more stock on those things and on each other than we place on God and on Christ and on the race that we're trying to run, even our good relationships can drag us down. There are so many different things that we need to fight against, and we become these people in this passage, these examples or parables that Christ is using here. He says that, you know, nobody goes to build any kind of structure without first counting the cost, so that they don't end up, you know, laying the foundation, getting a really good start. They got all the framing done, but they don't have enough money for drywall. You know, they get to a point that they've built something in the structure, but they don't have enough to finish. And then no king goes out into battle against another nation with half as many troops and just says, I don't know, we'll hope that we can defeat them. Nobody does that. Nobody goes into anything in life with that little planning. Instead, they take a step back and say, can we do this? Can we complete this tower? Can we win this battle? So that they don't end up, in the case of the battle, even with greater stock placed on that. It's, you know, two nations coming against each other with many lives at stake. And if this king didn't prepare enough, he's going to come out of battle against them, realize what he's up against, and then send a messenger out to say, hey, guys, we didn't mean it. Can we have peace now? You don't go out against someone in battle not knowing that you've got a chance to win. But we approach our Christian life with so little planning. We approach our Christian life without first counting the cost. You know, there is a cost to running this race. There's a lot of things that we have to let go of that we don't want to. And some of that's just past parts of our lives. You know, we've got sin problems that we want to hang on to because we enjoy them in the moment. And we have so many different things that drag us back, these weights and these sins that are making this race of life so difficult. And if we don't count the cost and understand the things that we're going to have to let go of before we begin this race, we're not going to be able to finish. In James chapter 1, verses 6 through 8, we can see a huge issue that we face in this race, and that is doubt. And a lot of the struggles and the different weight and sin that we carry stems back to doubt and double-mindedness, and we see that in this passage. It says, but let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. For he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. For let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. Paul wrote to the Ephesians, and he talked to them about being tossed about with every wind and wave of doctrine. Everything that came along, they were able to fall to because they just didn't have a strong commitment to the Lord. They were double-minded. You know, there was a big part of them that wanted to serve God, but there was also a big part of them that didn't, and that was holding on to all of those weights and that sin. And a lot of the time, I think we're in the same boat. You know, we see passages like where Paul started to say, you know, the things that I want to do, I don't end up doing, and I end up doing the things that I hate. And, you know, we have moments like that as Christians. We have moments where we struggle and we start to fall back into our old habits. But Paul wasn't just giving in to those things. Paul wasn't just letting all the weight drag him down and turn it around on his race. We're going to have moments that we stumble. But if we let ourselves just continue carrying the weight, and if we let ourselves continue with double-mindedness, we're not going to make it very far. I feel like sometimes as Christians, we feel like we've got these two sides of ourselves. And our whole Christian life is about feeding this side, feeding the good side, and just pushing back down the bad side. And we feel like we're always just batting it down, saying, no, I don't do that anymore. I don't live that kind of life. And we just push it down, push it in the closet, make it wait till later. But we don't take the steps that we need to have a permanent solution to our problem. And God's not satisfied with pushing that problem down and pushing that old man down or into the closet. He wants it dead. And in Romans chapter 8, verses 13 through 15, it says, for if ye live after the flesh, ye shall die. But if ye through the Spirit do mortify the deeds of the body, ye shall live. For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God. For ye have not received the spirit of bondage again to fear, but ye have received the spirit of adoption, whereby we cry, Abba, Father. We read a part of this passage earlier when we were talking about bearing witness that we're the children of God. And we do that when we choose to be led by the Spirit, when we choose to follow the things that we understand from the Spirit of God through His Word. But on the other side of that spectrum, so often we hold on to the deeds of the body. We hold on to the old man as long as we can because we feel like maybe, you know, we can go back to the security of our old life. We feel some sense of security in a life of sin because it's comfortable for us. And because of that security that we feel in that life of sin, we don't want to quite kill the old man. We want to just kind of subdue it for the time being, until we want to just pull little parts of that life back out. And it's so easy for us to take old sin problems and subdue them and not think about them for a while until we look back and we got the ball and chain still on our ankle. And that's when we recognize that we're not running the race that we're expected to run. And the whole time we thought that we had effectively subdued that old man. God expects us to mortify or kill those things. Don't hang on. Don't let that chain still be attached to you and then go out and try to run your race. We've got to have that moment where we say no more. And look, we're still going to struggle. We all understand that this is a difficult race. But God expects more of us than us just saying, not right now. Not right now. This isn't the time that I want to fall to sin. Maybe later, maybe when I'm uncomfortable and want that old comfort, but not right now. In Ezekiel 18, verse 31, we see God's expectation of us to have a new heart and a new spirit. It says, cast away from you all your transgressions, whereby ye have transgressed, and make you a new heart and a new spirit. For why will ye die, O house of Israel? When we choose to sin, we willingly choose death. That's the choice that we're making. We're willingly choosing to allow our lust to take over, to go down the path of sin, and as we read before, sin, when it's finished, brings forth death. And the prophet Ezekiel here asks the children of Israel, why do you want to die? Why is this the choice that you're taking to rebel against God and die? He was asking them, why are you making this decision? It wasn't just, why are you, you know, allowing yourself to be in this circumstance and there's outside things, you know, making you die? You're making the decision. And when we choose to sin and when we choose to hang on to those old things, then we are choosing death. And God has higher expectations for us than that. He says, make you a new heart and a new spirit. Again, we can't just kind of have a refresher course every once in a while and hope that that old man of sin doesn't become too big for us. We've got to become new. You know, Christ talks about how we have to be born again through him. And that's the first step of our efforts to gain a new heart and a new spirit. And it's a lifelong commitment. We're always renewing our heart and renewing our spirit. But we can't let ourselves hold on to the things of our old lives. We've got to fully commit. We see an example in Numbers chapter 13, verse 31 through 33, where the Israelites didn't fully commit to trusting in God. In Numbers 13, verse 31 through 33, it says, but the men that went up with him said, we be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land, which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the son of Anak, which came of the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers. And so we were in their sight. And then Numbers 14:1 says, and all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. Like we've all had this moment on our Christian race. We're running the race. We feel committed to God. We feel like we're being successful and following him, but we haven't truly made the choice to fully commit to him and to trust him. And the Israelites, you know, they wanted to enter the land of Canaan. They'd received promises about the land of Canaan, this promised land that they were going to receive since the time of Abraham. They'd been receiving these promises for generations. And then when they got to the gate, they said, you know, we've gotten this far, but it's just too hard. We don't have enough power. We don't have enough strength. And we have these moments of self-reliance where we feel like we're supposed to be able to run this race on our own. And we're just not. You know, the Summer Olympics just finished, and I didn't get to watch them, but, you know, we've seen so many different interviews with different athletes. And when they've just won a race or won some type of athletic event, they say, you know, I thank my coaches, I thank my trainers, I thank my nutritionist, you know, all these different people that they have around them telling them what they need to do. You know, we can't run this race on our own, and we need each other and we need God. And when we have this moment where we, you know, come to these rocks in our road and when we come to these obstacles in our race, it's not time to give up. It's not time to look at that and say we've come this far, but we're done. We just can't get over this next hurdle. The Israelites said that they were grasshoppers in their own sight, and so we were in their sight. They saw themselves as grasshoppers, and they thought that the enemies saw them as grasshoppers, and maybe they did. I mean, these people in this land were giants, and they felt small before them. And I've been around people that made me feel small, but more than that, I've been around things and buildings and, you know, waterfalls and, you know, canyon walls and different things like that I just felt tiny. and that's how our Christian race is. It's a hard race. And when we look at it, we just don't feel like we can accomplish it, and we can't. We have to remember the God that we serve. And this is where we go straight back to the beginning of this study, where we looked at the great cloud of witnesses that point to the faithfulness of our God. When we have weak moments in our race, we look back to the faithfulness of our God. We look back to the promises that he's made, the eternal reward that he's going to give us for succeeding in this race, not by our own power, but by his. And when we trust in God, we don't have to have this moment where all the congregation lifts up their voice and weeps because we feel too small. Because with God, we don't have to feel small, because it's not about us, it's about him. If we truly commit ourselves to running this race and to trusting in God, we'll get to where we love this path that we follow. And in Psalms chapter 25, verse 4 through 5, it says, "Show me thy ways, O Lord, teach me thy paths, lead me in thy truth, and teach me, for thou art the God of my salvation. On thee do I wait all the day." It's not always tough moments. You know, we do have tough moments in our Christian walk, but we also have amazing moments. Because through the power of God, we've been blessed in so many ways to be able to walk this walk that we're on and to be Christians. We're blessed in so many ways that we sometimes overlook as Christians. And, you know, God's right there beside us. And Christ has already run the race that we're running and faced the obstacles that we've faced. And so we can see these opportunities. He's said that he'll bear our yoke. He said his yoke is easy, his burden is light. And so when we look at this race, we can get to where we love this path. And although it's difficult and we have hard moments, this is the only path that we want to walk and that we want to run. In Joshua chapter 1 and verse 9, it says, "Have not I commanded thee? Be strong and of a good courage. Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed, for the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest." And this takes us straight back to this idea of needing to trust in God rather than ourselves, because there will be trials on this race. But we've been commanded to be strong and of good courage, and we have no need to fear. Perfect love, both God's love for us and our love for him. If we truly love God and trust in him, there's no need for fear. One of our expectations on this race that we're running is not just to focus on our own race, but also to prepare those who come after us as well. And in Psalms chapter 78 and verse 4, it says, "We will not hide them from their children, showing to the generation to come the praises of the Lord and his strength and his wonderful works that he hath done." And then in verses 7 through 8, it says, "That they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments, and might not be as their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation that set not their heart aright and whose spirit was not steadfast with God." You know, this is a part of our expectation from God on our race. It's not just to run our own race, but to encourage those who are coming up behind us, encourage the next generation, encourage all of those who are struggling to run the race as well. And, you know, this passage is really a perfect description of the goal of all of those who made up the great cloud of witnesses that we looked at there in Hebrews 12 and 1. They were striving to show the next generation the praises of the Lord and his strength and his wonderful works. And that's what they've shown us. That's what they bore witness of to us, so that we can see the greatness and the faithfulness of God. And we have that same expectation on our race, not just to seek to follow God in his faithfulness, but to tell those behind us, God is faithful. And you're going to find the reward that he's promised at the end of this race. You know, it's not just the good things that we want to teach people about from our race. You know, we can teach them about the successes that we've had through the power of God, but also we all have stubborn and rebellious moments. And we can teach others about the stubborn and rebellious times too, and how to go away from those things, how to seek to not follow in our steps in that way. And so it kind of creates this full circle. We have this great cloud of witnesses that can be an incredible example for us to run this race. We need to lay aside the weight and the sin that so easily besets us and run this race with patience. But also, as we run this race, we can become one of those who bears witness to the faithfulness of God. And so the next generation begins. The next Christian takes the first step on this race and on this path, looking to those who bear witness to the faithfulness of God to take courage. And so together as a congregation and as the church as a whole worldwide, we have an opportunity to encourage one another and to run this race together and to push each other to not lose focus on the faithfulness of God. I want to read one final passage this evening in Hebrews chapter 10, verses 35 through 39. It says, "Cast not away, therefore, your confidence, which hath great recompense of reward. For ye have need of patience, that after ye have done the will of God, ye might receive the promise. For yet a little while, and he that shall come, and will not tarry. Now the just shall live by faith, but if any man draw back, my soul shall have no pleasure in him. But we are not of them who draw back unto perdition, but of them that believe to the saving of the soul." We are not of them that draw back. We're not a part of those who hesitate in their walk with Christ. We're a part of those who believe in God, put their trust in God, who have been cleansed by Him, and who look always to that great and faithful God who's going to give us that reward if we patiently run our race. So this evening, I hope this study has been encouraging for you and has helped you to see ways that we can improve how we run our race as Christians and how we can look not only to the great cloud of witnesses, but also to each other as encouragement in our race, to look to Christ as the author and finisher of our faith, the one who completed the race perfectly and the only one to ever complete this race perfectly, and look to him as the ultimate example. We've got an opportunity to lay aside every weight and sin that's ever troubled us and run this race for the cause of Christ. This evening, if you haven't taken that first step in your walk with God, and you'd like to be baptized this evening to take that step and to become a Christian and to follow God on this path that He's set before us, we want to help you. Or if you're already on that path as a Christian and need the prayers of the church, we want to help you as well. Please come while we stand and sing.